More of Lake Effect Now on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. We're talking this morning about the continuing reaction to yesterday's decision not to charge Christopher Manny, the former Milwaukee police officer, in the shooting death of Dontre Hamilton at Red Arrow Park in April. One person who has been watching developments closely is Paul Schmitz. The Milwaukeean is now innovator in residence at Georgetown University and a nonprofit leadership consultant. He's also former CEO of the national organization Public Allies. Schmitz decided shortly before last Friday's demonstrations in support of Dontre Hamilton to join the protest march that eventually resulted in the arrests of more than 70 people, including himself. He spent more than a day in jail in connection with the arrest. Schmitz wrote about the experience and why he decided to get involved for Huffington Post, and he joined us in the studio Monday afternoon to share his perspective. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mitch. It's good to be here.
Well, let's start with what's happened since you were arrested last Friday evening. The district attorney has announced his decision not to file charges against ex-officer Christopher Manny in the shooting death of Dontre Hamilton. Given the article you wrote for Huffington Post, I gather this decision does not come as a surprise to you.
It doesn't come as a surprise. It's part of a pattern. And I think that the important thing that all of us are responding in this way are saying is that it's not just these individual circumstances. There's a systemic pattern that is happening. And sleeping in a park, the last I checked, does not deserve a death sentence. Selling individual cigarettes on the street, last time I checked, does not deserve death sentences. Playing with a toy gun on a playground or buying a gun at Walmart don't deserve death sentences. And then beyond that, we just see that the system's broken in a lot of ways. And that doesn't mean that all the people in them are bad or broken. It means the system itself needs changes to make sure it's more fair and more just for everybody.
Was there a certain inevitability of something like this happening because of the system?
You know, I think that what we know is that if I was sleeping in that park, no one would call the police. We know that other police officers visited him and thought he was fine. And so, again, it's not that all police or anything like that. What we know is that he was suspect because of who he was.
Right. You say if you had been sleeping in that park, no one would have given you a second look. You, in fact, in the Huffington Post piece, wrote about your own brushes with the law when you were young. In fact, I think we actually spoke about it a bit when you were in the last time.
Yeah.
So how do you evaluate the trend that we have seen, the Dontre Hamilton, the Eric Garner and others, in the context of your own past experiences?
Well, I mean, I think the bottom line is that if you are, in my case, a privileged white person, and I was a CEO and I'm connected to a lot of city leaders, I could actually be doing things that are wrong and not get in trouble. And the story I wrote about was being a teenager and having smoked pot on the beach with some friends, and a police officer came upon us, and it was clear what we were doing. And we all denied it and talked our way around it, and we were given the odd benefit of the doubt. And I am absolutely clear that if we weren't who we were, if we had been African-American young men on that beach, we would have been arrested. And you could extend that out. I have so many friends and colleagues who have been harassed by the police, who've been stopped for pretext searches, who were professionals, who have never done anything wrong, who are very successful people. And so the bigger issue here is that we are selectively enforcing the laws. I quoted in the article this article that really struck me back in 1999 in the New York Times, where this reporter was following around these Los Angeles police officers who were doing pretext stops for drugs in South Los Angeles. And the reporter asked them, do you think you would get more people if you did these searches at UCLA than in South LA? And they said, yeah, we'd arrest more people in UCLA. But they're not arresting people at UCLA for smoking pot. They're not taking the dogs to the dorms at University of Wisconsin-Madison or Marquette or UWM. They're taking them to the neighborhoods. And if my kids and other people's kids who were in college or whatever were the ones getting arrested, the laws wouldn't be as they are. So we have a problem in that the way the laws are enforced, who gets stopped, who gets suspected, it's based on race and class. And we know that we need a fair system for everyone.
When did you make the decision and how did you make the decision to become part of last Friday's protests?
So I just was a concerned citizen. I've been following the case and all of these cases, and I had concern about the deeper issues, and I wanted to find a way to engage. And I saw someone post a photo from a previous rally, and I contacted them on Facebook. I said, who's organizing this stuff? I keep seeing these pictures, but I don't know how to get involved. And he told me to follow the Justice for Dontre, and I did that. And then I saw a flyer or whatever, the equivalent of that, on Facebook saying there was going to be a march 4 o'clock at Red Arrow Park. I went there thinking it was going to be a rally. I didn't know we were actually going to march. And I certainly didn't expect to spend the next 24 hours in jail.
You share the story, and we'll link people to the Huffington Post piece. But give us a nutshell description. You didn't expect to be marching. You certainly didn't expect to be arrested. So how did those two things happen?
Right. So what was interesting to me at first is when we left the park, we walked down State Street to 6th Street, and it was all blocked off already. So the streets were empty, and the police had barricaded the block so we could walk down them. So I thought there must have been like an actual parade route or something. It was confusing to me that like it was all blocked out for us and seemed all right.
Had you been part of protest marches in the past?
Yeah, here and there, but never had problems or anything. And then we got under the bridge on Fond du Lac, and they said half the group was going to go one way and half the other. And I went with my group, and the northbound ramp to I-43 was barricaded by sheriff's vehicles. And we walked up the ramp to where the vehicles were. So, again, we weren't blocking anything. It was already barricaded. We walked up to the barricaded and, did some chanting. We were all holding hands, and it was peaceful and it was respectful. And an officer came and told us at a certain point after we said our piece, there were two officers between us and the sheriff's vehicles. And one came up and said, if you don't disperse now, you will be arrested. And the guy with the megaphone, and I was kind of grateful he did it because I didn't want to, leave the group. But I was a little bit like I didn't know I was getting into. And he said, everyone disperse. We went up on the grass shoulder and began walking down towards Fond du Lac. And then I saw an officer on a radio get a call and say, arrest everybody. And he did a motion with his hand in the air, and they came and arrested everybody. And I was surprised because we'd been given a warning, disperse or you'll be arrested. And then we were arrested anyway. And for what was effectively two citations, I certainly didn't expect to spend 24 hours in jail.
Well, and you describe in your column that your initial dealings with the police on the scene, even as they were arresting you, was not unpleasant.
Almost all of the police officers and sheriff's deputies I interacted with, and I was with a diverse group, and so I was seeing how they're interacting with everybody, were respectful, polite, and professional. And even some of them joked. I talked about how one of them, the person searching me said, if I wasn't doing this, I'd be doing what you're doing. So many people said, we understand what you're doing. And it was very heartening to me because there is a fear of like I'm being arrested for protesting something a police officer did. And that's scary. And so it's heartening to hear that police officers and sheriff's deputies understood and supported at some level. Now, all of them would keep saying, but you can't go on the freeway, And while we were in jail, most of the officers I interacted with, again, were tremendously professional. And again, it was hardening to me because I was kind of worried that they'd be like, you were protesting a cop. We're going to, give you trouble. I mean, they did hold us for way too long.
Well, and where do you sense that came from? What do you think went wrong that at least in your eyes?
I think it had to be on purpose. I think it was making a statement. And I study civil rights history. I've written a lot about it. If you see my other essays, I write a lot about it. So I understood. We made a statement on Friday, and they were making a statement in response. They could have released us within a couple hours of our arrest. They could have released us a lot earlier. There was a decision and choice made to hold us as long as we were held. I didn't even get booked until 16 hours after my arrest. And that's ridiculous. I was held for 16 hours. And still, I've never been given a citation. I was given a pink slip with a court date. I don't have my citation. So,
but you have paid a fine already?
No.
No, you have not. Okay.
No. I just have a pink slip that says a court date. I know the fine because other people got their citations. I was never given my citations.
You have studied civil rights history and written a lot about it. So if you were going to unpack this problem and start unwinding it to its inception, where do you think it originates? What do you think is the first thing that needs to happen to wind things back? Or are we in the position where if you knew that, everybody else would know it too?
Yeah, I think that there's a little of that. I mean, there's historic and systemic issues. I do think that what we need to do is, and I will say this, so many of the protesters and a lot of the people I was with were African-American young men. They want a safer community. And some of them spoke eloquently. And I was really inspired and impressed by a lot of the young people I was with. They want a safer community. They don't believe the way the current system is working that it's actually making them safer. And so I think what we have to do is we have to figure out what does it really mean to have a safe community. We have to think about how do we make sure that laws are enforced in ways that are equal. We also know, and there's vast evidence, that at every level of the criminal justice system, there are racial disparities. if even when, you know, when you go as far as the death penalty, if you kill a white person, you are, I forget how many fold more likely to get a death penalty if you kill an African-American person. If you're African-American versus white, your sentence time is going to be different. The chances of you getting parole is different. At every level, there's racial disparity. And so I think that to me, it's about fairness. On one end, you've got the enforcement of laws. But once someone's committed a crime, if two people have done the same thing, they deserve the same amount of punishment or mercy. And the one factor you should not be able to look at and say that's the difference between what they got is race and additionally class, where that's an issue.
And do you think so, transparency is an issue here too?
I think transparency is an issue. And I think in our nation there's a lot of fear. And we've generated so much fear of these things, crime and criminals. And we created a bunch of laws in reaction to that that were out of proportion with actually what's happening. There were 350,000 people in the prison system 40 years ago. There are 2.3 million today. And we have less crime than we had then. So how can you say we've had less crime, but we have eight times the number of people locked up? And researchers have also looked to see if how much of the reduction in crime had to do with all these people being locked up, and they apportion a very small percentage to it. And this is rigorous peer-reviewed research. And so we know that crime isn't up eightfold, but the people in prison are. And over 500,000 of those are for minor drug offenses. And, you know, those are offenses, again, that I live in a wealthy part of our city. I have friends who are very wealthy professionals who I know I've been clean for 29 years, but I know other people who aren't, and they have no worry. But someone in the city has a rap sheet, and now anything they do builds on that for doing something that kids in the suburbs, which I grew up in or on the east side, do with impunity. And so the problem is systemic, and it has to be addressed at every level. But we need fairness. We need a system that treats everybody the same.
As we look specifically at the Dontre Hamilton case, what are your thoughts about a federal investigation? Do you think – is there still an opportunity for justice in this case that you see?
So I'm not a legal expert and frankly not an expert on the case. As I said, I'm a concerned citizen, not a leader or spokesman for the effort. I'm proud to have stood with the group and with the family. But I do think that it's something that should be reviewed. You know, a number of people have posted comments about the fact that he did grab the baton and swing it and hit the officer. But does it take 14 shots to stop that? And does it take death to stop that? Again, I have empathy. I can't imagine the stress and strain many officers have in doing their work. At the same time, two other officers approached him and didn't find a problem. So why did he find a problem? Why did he feel the need to pat him down? When he knew he was emotionally disturbed, why did he keep going? And, you know, I don't think that Dontre is the one who escalated the situation. If that was the case, then the other officers would have had an issue. The young woman who wrote the blog post from Starbucks disputing what the official word was and others who were there said it didn't have to go down like that. And so, again, yes, if, as they say, he swung the baton and hit the officer – does it take 14 shots to stop that? Do we have to kill somebody? And why did it get to that point? And so from my standpoint, the fact it got there, and the police officer was fired because he didn't follow protocols. And we don't just need training for mental illness. I think there's a broader community conversation. And I think, again, the organizers and activists who are working on this, I spent a lot of time with them. These aren't people I knew. They're really thoughtful folks. They realize that civil disobedience is never comfortable. It's disobedience. And it's not meant to be comfortable or easy. Martin Luther King was hated by people in community inconvenienced by marches and protests back in the 60s. They know that that's what they're doing. They're trying to draw attention. They're trying to make people reckon with this. But we need a conversation that leads to real change in laws and procedures.
It must feel a little surreal to have your name that's sort of, if not out front on this issue, certainly associated with it. You know, you've blogged for Huffington Post, there are people commenting on it, and all of a sudden this is an issue that is associated with you.
Yeah, it's odd for me. It's certainly not something I expected. And as I said, I'm not a spokesman for this effort. I'm not a leader in this effort. And I don't want to be represented as an expert on these issues. I'm a concerned citizen who got engaged, but I think in my engagement, I got kind of swept into it at a deeper level. And I have a platform because of my role as a leader nationally and in the city and the boards I sit on the groups I'm affiliated with. I have a platform, and I felt it was important to use that platform and use the privilege and connections I have to get the story out in a way that others would not have heard.
Paul Schmitz, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Milwaukee native Paul Schmitz is innovator in residence at Georgetown University and a nonprofit leadership consultant. His book, Everyone Leads, is about lessons from his time as CEO of the national organization Public Allies. Schmitz was arrested last Friday in the demonstrations in support of Dontre Hamilton, the man killed by a Milwaukee police officer last April in Red Arrow Park. The experience he wrote about in a blog post on Huffington Post. We'll have a link to that later on WUWM.com. That's also where you'll find a complete archive of our coverage, which continues later today. I'm joined now by WUWM News Director Marge Pitroff in the studio. Marge, what are the stories you're following this afternoon and on into the future?
Well, Mitch, right now we have a reporter, Aaron Toner's at City Hall, to learn what several members of the Common Council believe they can do to kind of influence policing policies. And a couple of things that they've hinted to is reevaluating diversity training within the department and monitoring certain officers who appear to have violent tendencies. So Aaron's going to poke around and find out what the council actually could enact. It seems like police practices are pretty uniform across the country. So it'll be interesting to find out what she learns and how the police chief reacts. Of course, we'll be at the rally tonight at Red Arrow Park. And we also have a former member of the Fire and Police Commission who's going to take us back in history about how police and the community here in Milwaukee have interacted over the decades. So those are upcoming.
Those are stories that you'll hear either yet this afternoon or on into Morning Edition tomorrow, I'm guessing.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much, Marge.
You're welcome.
Marge Pitroff is WUWM News Director, and as we said, you can find all the coverage of our Dontre Hamilton case and its aftermath at our website, WUWM.com. You can also find out more about the programs you listen to every day and the people that bring them to you. And then you can also stream us live wherever you go, wherever you want to listen at WUWM.com. Well, that's all for the Tuesday edition of Lake Effect. I'm Mitch Teich. Thank you so much for listening today. Hope you can tune in again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, your NPR station in Milwaukee. Keep listening. Coming your way at 12 noon today, it's Here and Now from WBUR in Boston and NPR in Washington. And you'll get all the latest news from around the nation and around the world. Right now, though, it's just about 11 o'clock. Stay tuned because Fresh Air is next.